This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and we're from Joy Breakfast.
We hope you enjoy this Joy podcast.
It's 10 minutes past 8 on your Tuesday morning, and it's time for us to get our science on.
Yes, Valentine's Day was last week, and folks have had love on the brain ever since, including the science community, who once again have found evidence of some of the ways love can change our brains.
To dive into fuzzy little rodents and more ways in which they can burrow their tiny little snouts into our hearts, we have the fabulous singing scientist Kat Nugent joining us again for our monthly Queer Science session. Segment. Welcome.
Hello. I'm ready to get my love on.
Yes. Now, we all crave love, and we're finding out what voles can teach us about love. But firstly, what are voles, just in case we can't picture this adorable little creature?
Well, firstly, I would recommend Google Images. Like, they are adorable. But they are cute, fuzzy little rodents that are like the size of a tennis ball.
Yeah, I think they're kind of cross between like a meerkat and a rat.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that looks from the description. I feel like they're the things I see in cartoons that I never know what they actually are. They're like little balls and things. The things in Alice in Wonderland that they used with croquet with the they're what they are. Now, okay, so that's what a vole is, but how exactly, what do voles have to do with science and love?
Well, prairie voles are a great animal for studying relationships and bonding because they undergo pair bonding. So that means that they are monogamous. And, you know, I'm not saying that all of us humans are monogamous, but many are. And monogamy is actually something that's really rare among mammals. It's estimated that only about 3% of mammal species are monogamous, which is really not a lot.
I love the fact that it's just like, no, they're just getting around. It's fine. Everyone's enjoying themselves.
Yeah, whereas like with these prairie voles, even when their female partner dies, the male doesn't look for a new partner. So they love their one.
So they still don't go through like divorce or anything. There's no like prairie vole divorce.
Which one's getting the kids?
And courts and things. Yeah. Not that I know of.
I wonder what a prairie vole court case would be like. Like a Judge Judy version of a prairie vole would be interesting.
You keep the kids.
Cute little wig.
Okay, so they literally mate for life, which means that even if their significant other, it's so weird. What do you call the partner of a prairie vole?
Their significant vole.
Their SO.
Yeah, their SO or SV. They just don't move on.
No, not really. Like sometimes they might, but it was discovered that they were monogamous. When an ecologist was studying rodents in the field, and unlike other different rodent species, specific pairs of female and male prairie voles kept showing up together in the same traps. They just didn't want to part.
Oh, that's really wholesome.
I love that.
That they even want to be trapped together forever. Some people call that marriage.
Yeah, I was about to say, some people think that's what love is.
We are going to find out just a little bit more about what science has to say about these prairie voles. You're on Joy Breakfast with Rach and Dean, and we are joined by Kat Nguyen, our singing scientist.
Joy.
It's almost 8:15 on your Tuesday morning. You're on Joy Breakfast with Rach and Dean, and we are talking love with Kat, and we want to know what science got to do with it.
Now, Kat, we're talking about prairie voles, some cute little fuzzy animals. We could say rodents, but rodents,
they're cute.
To me, rodents are ugly. These are adorable. So what have scientists found go on within the brains when they form their bonds?
Yeah, well, a lot of it's looking at hormones, and another part of it is looking at neurons, so the nerve cells in our brains. So vasopressin, which is a regulator of bonding, that's a hormone, and perhaps you may have heard of oxytocin, which is related with love. These hormones are quite ubiquitous among animals. Like lots of different animal species have them. But the difference with prairie voles, or perhaps in humans as well, is the changes in our brains brought about by these hormones, which can be influenced where receptors for these hormones are and how many receptors there are. It's kind of like you may be trying to send lots of letters through the post, but if there's no mailbox on the other end to receive them, the message isn't going to get through.
Oh, that's such a good description.
So is this where the craving part comes in? These little neurons are actually indicating that there's craving for love.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have different parts of the brain that are associated with reward and our reward centers. Now, one way that we've learned a little bit about love is comparing prairie voles and meadow voles, and they're a little bit more promiscuous. So when researchers delivered extra copies of particular genes for receptors for these hormones in the part of the brain that's associated with reward, the usually sort of solitary and promiscuous meadow voles gain sort of a propensity for cuddling, which is super cute. Oh. So because they could receive the message, they were like, oh, we want to cuddle more.
Oh, I love this so much because, you know, cuddling is curative in every way, shape and form. I think what I love the most is that we're learning about a scientific reason why when, you know, a friend of yours gets loved up or falls for someone and then they kind of drop off the map for a little bit and just hang out with their partner and cuddle on the couch, now we can blame science for it. It's not that they don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah, well, like it's actually a craving though. So another hormone that people have studied is dopamine, which is sort of the pleasure-inducing hormone. It's the same one that underlies cravings for sugar, nicotine, and other things. So if you head out for a hot date, you get a flood of dopamine in your brain that's heading to your brain's reward center and motivates you to keep sort of that bond alive. But if you head out to meet a colleague instead, that flood might sort of be a little bit more of a trickle. And the way that they studied this is making their prairie voles sort of go over hurdles and obstacles to either be with like a stranger vole or their SO, SV, whatever we're calling their partner.
Their significant vole.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so they've actually linked these same bits in these teeny tiny little brains to the bits that are in our brains.
Yeah, totally. And in another experiment, the vole couples kept apart for 4 weeks, which is kind of like an eternity in the life of a rodent.
And
that kept apart, or they kept themselves apart, or the scientists kept them apart?
The scientists kept them apart. How mean, right? But when the couple was reunited, they did remember one another, which is great, but that signature of dopamine surge had almost vanished. So in essence, that fingerprint of desire or craving was gone. So as far as their brains were concerned, their former partner was indistinguishable from any other voles. But this actually could be good news for humans who have undergone a painful breakup or, you know, lost a spouse, suggesting that the brain kind of has an inherent mechanism, I guess, to protect us from endless unrequited love.
I love that. I love the fact, that we can thank science for this and know that it's actually real. It's not all in our head.
So what is 4 vole weeks in human years?
I'm not entirely sure how long it is in terms of our time, but it is long enough for voles in the wild to find another partner if they were going to. So, you know, whatever your standard period is between relationships.
It's got me interested in because I this is an unofficial science when it comes to a breakup, but I think emotionally we as humans, when you break up with a partner, if you halve the amount of time you're together, that's the amount of time it kind of takes you to feel over them. Like, so for some people that's a good thing, for some people that's small, but you can always average it out. About half the amount of time you were together is when you finally just kind of let go of some stuff. I wonder if this has to do with the things in the brain as well and the chemicals and energies that you feed off when you're trying to get away from someone or break away from them after a breakup.
Yeah, maybe, but it's not like we can say that prairie voles are humans. You know, obviously they're not. So these insights into what we call the neurobiology of love might not be directly applicable to humans, but, you know, they're cute. And scientists are also doing more research, like right now, to answer that question of how well these results and these findings in voles translate to their bigger brain, two-legged counterparts, i.e. us. But they do believe that, you know, this kind of work could ultimately have important implications for people who've either had trouble forming close relationships or people who struggle to get over loss, a condition known as prolonged grief disorder. So, you know, pain breakups are painful, but if we can understand a little bit more about them, maybe they can be a little bit less painful.
Wow.
Can you imagine if you suddenly realize you are less chemically inclined to love, so you can take a chemical to be able to help you love up more?
That's just like crazy. Imagine if they could.
I'd want that all the time.
Oh my gosh, Kat, we have learned so much from you this morning, but we can't let you go without asking a really important question that was in our Totally Tricky True or False trivia.
And also terrifying. It was a totally terrifying question, right? I mean, it was amazing, but the more we went down the rabbit hole, or chicken hole as it was, the more terrifying it became.
Now, I found a fact on the internet that said a chicken was once kept alive for 18 months after its head had been cut off.
Yeah.
How scientifically possible is that?
Well, I heard you talking about the fact that, you know, a chicken would need to eat, right? But, you know, the chicken doesn't actually need to eat. We don't need to eat. We just need the nutrients, like that energy that comes from the food and all those nutrients, those goodies. So if you think about it, if you just sort of fed a chicken, like, you know, I'm thinking about like IV. Can you IV a chicken?
Oh,
but like essentially
true.
If you, I think for the chicken, if I could be wrong, but I think they were like sprinkling the nutrients on the neck to like but even if it wasn't through the neck, the idea is that if you do give it sort of like a nutrient soup, that is enough to sustain it.
Wow. This is totally interesting, but the visuals that's bringing to my brain are so terrifying.
Wow. All right.
Oh,
well,
my God.
We have so many more things that we could ask. The only thing that I'm going to request is that the next time that we have you on, being next month, can we get a song?
Oh, totally.
Yes. All right. You heard it here first. She is the singing scientist, and we are so thrilled to have Kat Nguyen as our science singing scientist for Joy Breakfast.
Can't wait for the singing scientist live lounge next time you're here with us in the studio. We're seeing you be like, what? What's going on? What do you mean?
Thank you for introducing us to Prairie Voles and filling our hearts with love today. Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and I hope you enjoyed this little snippet of the fun we bring to air as a part of Joy Breakfast during weekdays.
Don't forget to tune in from 7 till 9 a.m. or like and subscribe to the Joy Podcast.
And keep yourself out loud and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy Podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.